Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Put your sports team around there. Like, I have a Buffalo Bills license plate frame. I don't. Why do you have?
Oh, I think it's worse to put the team logo
there. Too.
Really?
Yeah, and I keep the dealership one on just because I think it helps protect the sharp edging. Because you often get the curled edges on the license plates when it's left alone.
But doesn't that look cooler to have the curled edges? Like you're kind of a badass, like outdoor woodsman or something.
Is that what you're going for?
When wow!
I just
on your hybrid.
Yes.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Yes, and Luke gets crazier every moment we have him on. Gene McManus is with us. Tori Clark is with us. Michael Kornheiser is with us. Nigel is here. He will run the board. He'll do the news tonight here at Chatter at the corner of Jennifer Street and Wisconsin Avenue Northwest at 8 o'clock. Capitals at Tampa Bay. Please come and go through either the agony or the ecstasy with us. And spend money because we are full service for profit. And Memorial Day weekend, which starts Saturday. We have Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and our flyers say here's to our heroes. On Saturday, it's oysters all day, oyster specials, because nothing says Memorial Day like oysters. On Sunday, in honor of the Indianapolis 500, which is a great, great television event most of the time, there are 500 minutes of 500-cent specials from 11:30 in the morning to 7:49 at night, including 500-cent select beers, 500-cent fried chicken sandwiches, and 500-cent Winner's Circle milk and cookies. This is all day Sunday. 500 cents is $5. It's a pretty good deal. On Monday, there's an extended weekend brunch because we're not doing the show Monday. So from 11:30 to 2:30, there's brunch with bottomless mimosas and $5 Bloody Marys. And all weekend long, in honor of those people who serve the country, on Memorial Day, from Saturday through Monday, there are the Patriot specials. These are $9. It's two hot dogs and a beer. Two hot dogs and a beer. Hot dogs with chili, diced onion, and yellow mustard. And that would be Wilbon's chili, correctly, I think. And 20% of all of the sales of that will be donated to Pets for Vets. I am always for animal charities.
Oh, sure.
Always for animal charities. And complimentary Patriot special to all active or retired military with ID. So you can do that.
Nice. We have another program called Monkeys for Flunkies.
Yes.
That we're really trying to get started.
Well, I think after Pets for Vets, I think we'll go to that. Now,
did the gang here tonight please do a joint prayer for Brian and Devin who are on their way to
Tampa? I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be fine. We could start with all the gifts we have received, or we could start with the basketball game. Gene?
Gifts.
Because okay.
I only watched the highlights of the basketball.
All right.
It started too late.
Greg Wells in Wyomissing, Pennsylvania. Enclosed, please find a small token of my appreciation for you doing your cable TV business with Comcast. I've gotten several comments from fellow Littles about the show in which you commented on your bill, and I, aided by Gary, attempted to help. The two signs are enclosed for you and Gary. What are the signs? What do we have?
La Cheeserie. It looked like a cheese board to me, which I thought was very clever because it had La Cheeserie on it. But there's a little hook on the back, so I guess you could use it for cheese and then hang it on your
wall. That's fine. In addition, I've enclosed a ViewMaster with some Hallmark movie reels because the only thing better than watching a Hallmark movie is viewing a 3D still of one through a viewer pressed to your face. It may be the best way for Walker to get acclimated to the shows in your home. And then he ate twice at Chatter, which is nice. These are very nice. Jean gave them to me before to look at, but she hadn't pressed the disc down, and nothing happened.
I'm left-handed.
And then
it's
hard
for me to
see
operate
stuff.
Equipment.
It's that high-tech stuff. Tony has problems.
From David Collier in Severna Park, Maryland, I was the fellow at Chatter for last Thursday's show who was recounting my half-cross Canada drive in 1989 to downtown Winnipeg, ideally to purchase a Sunday New York Times. I gave some DVD tribute to Chris of season one of Dawson's Creek, and then I realized I hadn't given you anything. So he gave us the crown.
Excellent.
Which everyone says is great.
Spectacular.
Which I think I have at home somewhere, but I haven't
seen it. Speaking of Dawson's Creek, what has happened to Ian? We have not heard from him.
I don't know. I guess he's...
Ian, come out of where you are and come see us.
In an attempt to become the official middle school of the Tony Kornheiser Show, or at least the official Delaware Sussex County middle school of the Tony Kornheiser Show, I enclosed the official Seaford Middle School Challenge Coins. Now, if I understand this correctly, a challenge coin is something you use at a bar to either you buy a drink or get somebody you're with to buy the drink. Why are kids from Seaford Middle School hanging out at bars?
Because it's kind of transformed into this thing where people give them, primarily the military, give them to people to thank them, to reward them, to commend them for exceptional effort.
Well, Cam says, not sure if it will win many challenges, but I sent a coin for you and baby boy Bootsy in tribute to all the years of laughs. We are not the 19971. We're the 19973. Okay, so that's fine. Here is something from Justin Johnson in Arlington, Virginia. I've long awaited the day I would have... Michael is cringing because he thinks people are not listening anymore. I've long awaited the day I would have an opportunity to send in my very own wedding invite celebrating the bond of my fiancé and me. To make it even better, I couldn't wait for an elaborate scheme I've thought about since your purchase of Chatter to play out, where I would send in the invite but actually request that you RSVP using my copy of Pumping Irony. I've then asked that you keep it at the bar so I can feel like a big one time by stopping in the following day and letting the bartender know Tony left something for me as I purchased lunch in your for-profit restaurant. I autographed the book and I sent it back. And Justin is getting married.
Look at the location.
Tuckerstown, Bermuda.
Ooh.
In Bermuda.
We should probably go
there. Isn't
that
nice? That's very, very nice. And I'll do one more now. And this is, hats. We gave out these hats earlier today. This is RJ from Bronxville, New York, by way of LaGrange, Illinois. How's it going? I've been meaning to send you a big box of this or that for some time now, and I finally found the perfect items to send while strolling through the office last week. Enclosed is a gift from the team that works on the Dos Equis brand and all of your friends at Heineken USA. I'm the same young fellow that, much to your surprise, informed you that Heineken owns... Yes, I didn't know this. That Heineken owns Dos Equis. I had no idea about that. When I made my pilgrimage to Chatter earlier this year, since the brand's media campaign are a constant, albeit brief, discussion topic on your show, I thought it only right to send the whole gang a Dos Dad hat. I've added mine to the rotation of golf hats, but feel free to use them at your discretion. Now, we did throw some hats out today, and this is Keep It Interessante. Now, again, you had the greatest campaign ever with the most interesting man in the world, who I believe is still alive.
Yes.
And still could do all of those commercials. You walked away from him. You went to Michael Phelps.
Yeah, the creepy Michael Phelps.
And you had to get rid of that in a very short order because it didn't work. And now you're doing supposedly funny commercials, making fun of yourself by saying that your founder is Lou Ferrigno, and now you're saying keep it interessante. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. Stay thirsty, my friends.
Yes.
Works. Stay thirsty, mis amigos, doesn't work. Keep it interessante. Am I wrong on this? I don't want to hurt RJ,
did
but
that first guy make demands that were...
There was some contract.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he wrote a book about himself. I know he wrote a book about
his
own life.
I got to meet him one time. He was a lovely man.
He's a pleasant guy.
Lovely man.
And by the way, Sneaky Short.
Yes.
Sneaky Short.
Which is fine by me.
I met him too.
I think in the spirit of forgiveness, they ought to let him come back.
I do too.
And they could do a great campaign around that.
You found him. You found him again. He wandered off. He got off his meds. He wandered off. He's back and he's still drinking.
There you go. We've got the narrative.
And it's stay thirsty. Am I wrong on this?
No, you're not wrong.
That worked.
You're right. Hey, back to the wedding invitation. It gives me another idea. In addition to kids' birthdays on Saturday mornings, I think we should encourage people to do wedding proposals here at Chatter.
Oh, sure.
To get on a hands and knees and do that?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Again, we need a big cut out of you because you can't be here all the time. But a big cut out of you, and they could do it next to the big cut out of you.
I think that would be a nice
Well,
thing.
I think we should have the kids take over the podcast studio on Saturday morning, too.
You know, I would love to. My son talking to me. He's not talking to me because he's told me, he says, you need to understand when you do this, nobody's listening anymore. So let's get to the basketball game. And the basketball game last night surprised me.
I hope we're talking about the Rockets versus the Warriors, because that's the one I
watched. That's the only basketball
game. That's the only one that was on last
night. Wilbon, I'm sure, will say today on PTI that he wasn't surprised at all. But I was.
Yeah.
I was, especially when Golden State, as they always do, took a sizable lead in the third quarter. I was surprised they gave that back. I was surprised Houston won. I was surprised that Chris Paul had a game like he had. 27 points. Harden had 30. You'd say 57, that's a lot. But Curry and Durant had 55. Houston beat Golden State in Golden State. Golden State had not lost a playoff game in Golden State in 2 years. They had not done that. They gassed. They shot 3-for-18 in the fourth quarter. You can talk about good defense. That's fair. You can do that. They shot 3-for-18 in the fourth quarter. They're the best team in basketball, and maybe they're not. Because now this is 2 out of 3 games, and 2 of the 3, if it goes 3, will be played in Houston. Maybe the Houston Rockets really are the best team. Mike D'Antoni tried everything. After game 3, he called his team soft, which you don't do to your own players. He made this inane statement the other day that all the pressure was on Golden State when all the pressure was on Houston. Nothing was on Golden State. And Houston rose to it, and Houston won. We finally had a good game. We finally have a series. You took notes, Tori. Please tell us the result of your labor.
You've covered all my notes.
Oh, really?
But I'll,
I'm sorry.
I'll kind of riff anyhow.
Go ahead.
All right.
I always go back to the mail.
Yeah. No, I like watching at this stage of the game. And finally, this to me looked like the first basketball game I've seen the last couple of weeks where they were actually playing their hearts out. And it was very intense. It was very physical. And so then, because I'm fascinated by the coaches at this stage of the game, I go online and start Googling about Mike D'Antoni. Is that the name?
Mike D'Antoni. He played at Richmond. He's one of the great players ever at Richmond College. Yeah, he played a little bit in the pro. And then had a long career in Europe.
Yeah. So anyways, what I was reading is, he figured the only way they could beat them was just wearing them down, defense, defense, defense. And somewhere in what I read last night, they said his players didn't want to hear it. I'm not sure. I read 15
I don't believe
things.
That.
Okay, I'm just
saying. Mike D'Antoni is an offensive first guy. Mike D'Antoni was the guy when he coached at Phoenix with Steve Nash. Mike D'Antoni depends on a great point guard. If he doesn't have a great point guard, he can't win any games. But he wants to push it, push it, push it. He wants to take shots in 6 to 8 seconds. He's an offensive guy. So if somebody's writing this, that is a complete shift in the oeuvre of Mike D'Antoni.
Well, it looked like it at the end of the game last night.
They're playing hard.
Right, yeah.
They played hard.
And
James Harden.
Steph Curry was good for a while, and then when it really mattered, they were,
at the end of the game, Kevin Durant, who had not taken a shot in the last 3 minutes and 47 seconds, which is way too long for him to go, passed the shot up, gave it to Klay Thompson in what you're watching on TV is the top left, in the left corner. Yeah. And Klay Thompson got bottled up, and he had nowhere to go with it, and he got off a very bad shot that wasn't even close, and they were down two. That's the exact moment when you expect Thompson or Durant or Curry to make a shot to win the game.
And they set it up.
They're at home. Yeah. They're supposed to win that game.
They completely set it up for Steph Curry, and he seemed to be having a good game up till then.
He was.
But when it mattered, he wasn't
3 for 18 in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Your thoughts?
I watched only highlights, I confess. I got into the Nats game, and I'm a little bit exhausted after game six, night before last, I have to say.
Oh, the Caps.
I sort of needed a sports, you know, blank out. But I have two words. Trevor Ariza.
He used to be here. He used to be
Why
in D.C.
Why did they let him go?
They didn't want to pay him.
They didn't
wanted to pay Otto Porter Jr.
No, they didn't want to pay him because they were saving money for Kevin Durant,
who was never
going to come here.
Wouldn't even take an interview with him.
Yeah, it wouldn't come
like
to the meeting.
He said, all you other fellas can come to the Hamptons and talk to me, but not Washington.
Did you see the house, by the way, where they had the meeting?
No.
In the Hamptons?
No.
Spectacular.
Well, he owns the house.
The epitome of a Hamptons house.
Michael, do you want to join this on any level, or are you just...
It's basketball, not mail.
I already checked out.
Okay, that's good.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I did love this. That Steve Kerr
he's great.
Called a timeout when Houston scored its first 2 points and it was 12-2. Steve Kerr goes, okay, wait a minute.
Well, they had a timeout left, and with 4 seconds to go and the pass made to Klay Thompson in the corner, you can see Draymond Green trying to call time. And the referees don't acknowledge him. Steve Kerr said he was trying to call time. He said they weren't even looking at me. So, I mean, I don't know what you do about that. If they get a timeout, they probably get a better shot. Doesn't mean it goes down. Doesn't mean it's not contested. Anyway, game seven tonight in Tampa Bay. A lot of people will tell you this is for Alexander Ovechkin's legacy. That's stupid. It isn't. But getting to the Stanley Cup, they don't even have to win, right? Just getting to the Stanley. Although if they lose to an expansion team, they will be.
If they get swept by the expansion team.
Which I don't think is going to happen.
No,
I think that just getting to the Stanley Cup's a really big deal.
It's a really big deal.
How much?
I think they're going. I think they're going.
You think they'll win tonight?
Shush.
But how much
fun? Let me say that again.
Fun,
I think they'll win tonight.
How much fun would it be to see Ovi running through the streets of Chinatown with the Stanley Cup over his head?
Okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves, people. Can we not get ahead of ourselves?
This is, and I brought this up with Chris Paul. This is the Chris Paul moment for Alexander Ovechkin. Chris Paul still has to win this. These are great players who have not advanced far enough in their respective playoff circumstances. Neither has gotten to a final. They're now both, for the first time, I believe, in conference finals, Alexander Ovechkin and Chris Paul. Chris Paul was really good last night when he had to be really good. Yeah. That helps rewrite the story of your failures if you get to an actual final. That is a big deal for Chris Paul and for Ovechkin. I know Sands is saying, don't go with near Tracy McGrady. I'm not. I'm not. I'm saying Chris Paul now, which is probably a more precise analogy.
I think it's crazy to say this is about one person, or it's so much more for one person, in this case Ovi, than the rest of the players. I think TJ Oshie's heart is going to break, right? He's not the best player, but he never stops hustling, never stops hustling. He gets the most out of his talent, right? I think for every single one of them, this is so important. Holtby, the pressure on Holtby is enormous, right? Can he put together three games in a row?
I think the pressure on your husband and daughter is
huge. I'm not sure, but I do think they walked out of the house this morning with a bottle of whiskey.
Are you going to go to the watch party down at the Capital One Arena?
I saw that. You know what? That's great. They do that in a lot of cities, and it's about time. They're letting everybody in for free,
they
right?
They will fill that arena.
Yeah, but concessions are open at full price.
Okay, but that's fair.
Go pick up a nice red T-shirt.
I don't begrudge anybody making money. I'm in the making money business myself. But if you're going to go there and you can get in for free, that's a good idea.
I would like to point out.
You think it'll be filled? I don't know. I think there'll be about 8,000.
Based on my millennial sons.
You think there's going to be 20,000 people?
I think there'll be a lot of people there.
Wow.
I'd like to point out there will be a viewing party here at Chatter.
Yes, there will be. We've got the game.
Yes.
If you don't want to go all the way downtown, we've got the game.
And I can give them some advice in the merchandise store based on the other night. Keep those merchandise stores open as late as possible. Because when the fans win, a lot more drinking has been going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure how it happened.
We'll be selling Chatter T-shirts tonight at
$12. We've got some over-the-knee OV knee socks at home, which I'm not quite sure how that appears.
Will they be able to limit the penalties
tonight?
That's
your 80th beer.
Yeah. All right, so we'll come back. Richard Justice, of MLB.com when we return. Jeannie has a Justice story, I guess. Okay. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron read. Blue Apron is offering listeners to this high-quality podcast the first three meals free. When it comes to dinner, let Blue Apron take care of the planning and shopping while you do the cooking and the eating. You'll enjoy delicious meals like popcorn chicken with sweet chili cabbage slaw and cumin-spiced wonton noodles with vegetables and peanuts on the table in 30 minutes or less with incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes. Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients, step-by-step recipes right to your door. You can cook these. I've done this. I like this.
Yes.
The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. They offer 12 new recipes each week. Customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what best fits their schedule. Blue Apron sends only non-GMO ingredients and meat with no added hormones. You know, I think that sitting around and cooking with your family is nice. I think when you eat the foods, and a lot of times these are foods you would not necessarily buy, I think that's very pleasant and interesting. I don't think it changes your desire to get a hamburger, but I think that it's a very, very nice thing.
Right.
I do. I mean, I've done it and I like it. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free at blueapron.com. If you do Tony K, you have to press Tony, whatever you do.
Yell it
representative. Blueapron.com, Tony K. Do I see the socialite? I think the socialite is at the bar. It's pretty early even for him.
Oh, great.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Brandon S. Bowker, singer-songwriter, Lexington, Kentucky, sent in Magic Mirror. Says, I'm spending late evenings at my super secret recording spot, and you'll have new music soon. Meantime, here's some old music. One from October Music, 2 from Ruin. You can still get the Treehouse EP at Bandcamp, and you can hear my pop music show, Sirius Moonlight, on WRFL-FM, Saturdays 10 to midnight. Is that available around the country, or is that just probably in Lexington?
I'm not sure.
It's lovely.
He's very good.
We love Brandon. Yes.
We're happy to have him.
Yes.
We're happy to have Richard Justice, too. Richard Justice from MLB.com. We got a million baseball questions. Jeannie is here. Jeannie had a Richard Justice story.
Yes. So it doesn't sound like this connects to Richard, but it does. After Tom Wolfe died, I decided I wanted to reread The Right Stuff.
I'm rereading Bonfire of the Vanities.
Getting the book, I got the audiobook, which is narrated by Dennis Quaid, who sounds exactly like Richie.
Is that right?
And I sit and listen to The Right Stuff. I'm like, Richard, that's Richard.
That's a 500 page book. This guy sat there and did the whole narration.
He's great.
A lot of reading. You know, I got to know him a little bit when he was filming The Rookie. I had a scene, actually a speaking scene in the movie The Rookie.
Really?
Took my kids to the premiere. I was
red carpet.
I was going to sign autographs. got cut out.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, it's the only time my kids have ever been nice to me. I'm leaving the theater. I'm feeling 6 inches tall. And one of my daughters puts her hand on my shoulder and goes, "It's okay, Dad." I said, "Shut up. I was going to win something."
Do you know the most famous story of that, I think, in Hollywood is Kevin Costner?
Yes.
Kevin Costner was supposed to be in
The Big Chill. That's right.
He was the dead guy in The Big Chill.
Alex,
and he got cut out, Kevin Costner. So you're in good company.
Yeah, but the director there felt so guilty, he made a feature Western that started Kevin Costner. This guy, this director, and his name slips my mind, Johnny Lee something, he didn't come back. He didn't get back to me, if you know what I mean.
did they at least not call my people? Did they at least pay you? Did they pay you scale for it?
Yes, $92. But I will say this: John McClane and I of the Houston Chronicle, we stole enough from the food table that day that we made another probably $20. So we were.
And I know Richie can work a food table. I have seen it.
So Wilbon and I were in two movies. We were in Mr. 3000, which I've never seen, which was just missed the Academy Award, I believe.
Just barely.
And then we were in Creed.
Yes.
We were in Creed. So, I mean, that's...
Did you guys sort of make up your own scene? They were just like... Yeah,
well, they told us pretty much what they wanted us to do, but we changed the lines here and there, but we were still in. That was nice, although I haven't seen either of those. All right, let me get to... I have a million baseball questions, and I just want to start with the Yankees, because I know that everybody felt, what are the Yankees doing... And why do they have Aaron Boone, and they're spending all this money, and what if it collapses? Richie, they appear to be the real deal, don't they?
This is one of the great jobs any general manager has ever done. What Brian Cashman did, taking a mediocre to bad farm system and turning it into the best farm system in baseball, you see these kids come up, Gleyber Torres. I mean, he is a kid. Miguel Andujar, kid. And look, for that matter, I mean, Aaron Judge is 26 years old. And, you know, for instance, their center fielder is a guy named Aaron Hicks. They got him from Minnesota, and you ask Brian Cashman, what do you like about this guy? He's never done very much. And he goes, our people like what they see. The Astros went through, so we think of, you know, we think of the new age teams, the analytics teams,
yes,
the old school teams. The Astros had a guy went through LinkedIn and came back with the information that besides being a great scouting team, the Yankees have the largest analytics department in baseball. And I said, well, how do you figure that out? And he goes, well, if a guy's got a math degree from MIT, he's probably not the bullpen catcher at AAA. No offense to the bullpen catchers at AAA. But the hiring of Aaron Boone was this. When A.J. Hinch was fired by the Arizona Diamondbacks, people said, this guy will never work again. In the era we're in now, where you have to collaborate between the people upstairs, all this data, make it work, get a good effort out of your players, people skills are more important than anything. A.J. Hinch became the template that everybody was wanting. And all the hires in the offseason, Alex Cora, Aaron Boone, Gabe Kapler, and Mickey Callaway with the Mets, it was all this. They have people skills. People like them. They'll play for them in the long haul. They have a sense of humor, all of that. That's more important because there's an avalanche of information now. It's what do you do with it? So, yes, the Yankees are really good. They're built for the long haul, and they're going to need one more starting pitcher, and that starting pitcher may have pitched against them last night, Cole Hamels, and they have the depth to do it. They are a monster team right now.
Thank you for mentioning Gabe Kapler because all the people in Philadelphia wanted him fired in the first week.
Yeah.
I would say that as you look around the standings of baseball, the most surprising two teams are Atlanta and Philadelphia. They appear to be doing the Houston model, which is lose for a while, stack up a bunch of draft choices, and play them through the pain of losing. Atlanta and Philadelphia, within the last 2 years, looked like, as we say in baseball, dead meat. And they are really good right now. How does this happen?
This happens because you make decisions on kids, you let them play. Now, it's a little bit different. In Philadelphia, their best kids, Odubel, Herrera, I mean, if you see this guy play, his energy will captivate you. They let their pitchers get their brains beat in, all those to grow up. And then this all season you could see it coming. They added Jake Arrieta, a veteran professional presence to the top of the rotation. They were just poised to win. In Atlanta, they just brought him up. They just said, hey, this spring, you know, we're going to bring up a 20-year-old kid, Ronald Acuna Jr., let him play, 21-year-old Ozzie Albies, who already, I think he already has 14 home runs. It's unbelievable. And they scored 6 runs in the bottom of the ninth to beat, I think it was Miami on Sunday. If you saw the TV shots of their dugout, I mean, these are kids, and you could not help but be sort of caught into the energy and the joy they're playing with. It's not unlike what the Astros did last year. And like, people would ask me, said, I see these TV shots of their dugout. Are they really like that? And I said, they're really like that. That's the way. But one of the things we saw in free agency in the offseason is teams are not going to pay for age 20, 32, 33 seasons because they've now determined that a peak of a player's career is 27. If we saw it with, it started with Bryce Harper in 2012. If you've got a kid with talent, bring him up and let him figure it out. You know, you got the best example in the world in Washington, in Juan Soto. He was in high school like 2 weeks ago.
They have, as long as you brought up Bryce Harper, they have Juan Soto, who's not rated as highly as Victor Robles.
Right.
If they play Soto and Robles, they can afford to lose Harper, no?
Yeah, but where's Harper going to go?
Well,
I mean, it's going to come down to where Bryce wants to play. I don't think it's going to be – he can dictate the terms financially, but I don't see the Yankees as being a player for him. I know he's happy there, and I know he trusts Rizzo, and he likes Dave Martinez and all of that. But where does he want to play? You know, is it a commercial thing? Well, I mean, he's in the most powerful city in the world. There's got to be a couple of commercial opportunities there, and you see him on TV all the time now. But you're right. Every team, we saw it. The best example was the Cardinals walking away from Albert Pujols. Every player has a value. So if you can replace him with these two guys, you know, who knows what's going to happen to Michael Taylor's career, all of that stuff. Yeah, you can just keep going. And they are positioned to keep going. Mike Rizzo does a great job in being able to move, to transition the roster.
It's very interesting to me that there is this, right now there seems to be all these kids being brought up. Many of them, of course, are from the Dominican Republic, and there's always been the question of, are the ages lining up exactly correctly? But the difference between 19 and 21, to me, is negligible, and I don't know how old they are. But I know they can play, and I'm wondering, and this leads to like one of the larger questions for baseball, are you seeing teams tank in order to stockpile draft choices, in order to get young kids, in order to convince their fans, we'll lose for a while, but then we can do it just like Houston did it?
Yeah, and when you see the Astros win, the Cubs win, the Royals win, they all went down the same path. Now, the downside of that is, while you're doing this, your TV ratings go to zero. In Houston, the ratings were zero. Your ballpark empties out, and it's hard to get people to come back. People find they can live without it. So you can go ahead and do it, but you have to understand it's not automatic that all those kids are going to turn into Carlos Correa and George Springer. And you have to also understand that to get people to come back to the ballpark and make it part of their lives again is not that easy to do. So, you know, it's not always a straight line. So, and we've seen it in Cincinnati. We've seen it with the White Sox. They had a plan, too, but they've hit some bumps in the road.
See, what you're talking about, for many years, there was no team in Washington, and all of us very pleasantly went to Baltimore. It wasn't that long a trip. The ballpark, First Memorial Stadium, and then Camden Yards were very nice to be in, and it wasn't hard to root for the Orioles. The Orioles park is empty now. I mean, this is really early in the season. The Orioles park is empty. And that means in September, it'll look like Miami. And it leads to the question of they've got a top five ball. Manny Machado is one of the best five players in baseball. Where's he going?
I think next year, if I had a bet, it would be Philadelphia. Where is he going to the rest of this year? You know, the Atlanta Braves are going to go get someone. And that might be Mike Moustakas, that might be Manny Machado. But in Baltimore, the issue is larger. What's the plan going forward? Who's going to lead them? You're letting all these players become free agents. You didn't have a plan moving forward. you're letting your general manager, Dan Duquette, become a free agent, your manager, Buck Showalter. You know, who's in charge? Who's going to lead it? You hear these rumors that Brady Anderson's going to take over. Is he prepared to do it? Does he know what he's doing? It's beyond that. It's like you need to have an organizational blueprint going forward. And, you know, why did Camden Yards empty out? You remember when I was there, you had to plan. Jeannie, you remember this. You had to plan 4 weeks in advance to go to a game in Baltimore because it was every seat was gone.
Always. And always. And go, very pleasant place to go. Always.
Good crab cakes.
You go 15 years without winning, you become irrelevant. And when they started to win again in 2012, Adam Jones would ask the trainer, Richie Bansells, is this what it used to be like? Is this what it used to be like? And they had a big comeback on a Saturday night against the Yankees. And Richie turned to him and said, yeah, this is what it used to be like. But it's difficult to get people back, and now you're not going to get all those Washingtonians.
Not but now.
I still think that if you put a great product on the field and people sense that it's a well-run organization and all of that, that you'll do fine. I mean, I think there's enough people in the surrounding area, and also I think there's enough people in the Washington area that will drive up there occasionally.
Mark Teixeira, who's very good on television, Mark Teixeira made it seem like everybody knew that Robinson Cano was a drug cheat. What is your take on that?
Well, the Yankees suspected it because he palled around with Melky Cabrera and A-Rod. That's it. I will say this. He was 5 years in Seattle. And let me just say this in defense of this guy. You know, it's not just black and white. There's lots of gray. I saw that guy do things for their young players that were unbelievable in terms of leadership. They had a young guy they brought up named Ketel Marte, who's now with the Diamondbacks. He didn't know how to dress. He didn't have... he didn't have the swag that a big leaguer has to have. And Robbie Cano took him out and took care of him, and it set an example for all those guys in there. He was, I couldn't have a higher opinion of a player. Now what he did, and if he'd been doing it for 5 years, fine. From the beginning, baseball people said, "Who's going to test positive?" Well, there's going to be a guy that gets convinced that there's a masking agent, an undetectable substance, all of that. Yeah. You're still going to have guys test positive, and now he's paying the price, not just in terms of $12 million in salary. He's killing his team. His team's in contention, and now he can't play in the postseason even after he comes back.
I'll give you one last question and get you out of here. Paul Goldschmidt, who was an actual MVP candidate last year without any question, cannot hit fastballs. If you go 97, 98, 99, he cannot get around on fastballs. What does that mean for him and baseball players in their 30s in general?
Well, I hope it doesn't mean what you're implying. You know, Paul Goldschmidt's from two streets over from where I am right now.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
And he's one of the great, great people I've ever known. And he's a year away from free agency. He's one of the most professional. He's a consummate pro. I don't know what's going on with him, but I know how he's taking it. He's eaten alive by it, especially with so many injuries, and they've now lost 12 out of 13. And it did. I used to watch the at-bats last night. It did look like they were just delivering fastballs and said, you can't catch up to it. That team in Milwaukee, that's pretty good. They were going, the way they got him out for the last out was, the guy goes, Corey Knebel, the closer, 97, 97, 82 curveball. And when a guy does that, you go, nice job.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are these statistics that talk about Ryan Braun and Paul Goldschmidt and guys in their mid to upper 30s, and suddenly the fastball is too fast.
Well, we saw it. I mean, these teams now are run by smarter people than ever before. And the data says what the data says. You know, free agency was always partly emotion. We'll shut up the columnists, the talk show guys. We'll shut up the fans. We'll go sign this guy. Even though, hey, boss, that really actually doesn't make any sense. They're not doing that anymore.
It's really something. I love to watch baseball games now. I mean, although the team that I watch all the time drives me crazy when they go to the bullpen. But that happens.
That's part of the beauty of it.
All right, so we'll see you in a couple of weeks at the All-Star game, yes?
I hope so.
Okay, good. Richard Justice, boys and girls. Thank you, Richie. We will take a break. When we come back, we have news when we come back?
That's right.
Okay. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. It asks, what do you love most about shaving with Harry's? And love, I think, is too strong a word. I think we're all happy that we have these razors and we have these blades.
Yes, very much so.
I think everybody's happy about that. But when it says, you know, talk about the closeness of the shave and the smooth, comfortable glide.
Yes, love
and
that.
The weight of the razor handle. I've got to tell you, I've never, unless the handle is made out of iron and I can't lift it, I've never given that much thought to the weight of the razor handle. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades. They know that switching razors is not an easy decision, so they created a trial offer. You can claim yours by going to Harry's, HARRYS.com/TonyK. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features, like the cell phone, I guess. They knew a shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. It's why they bought the factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. And if you don't love the shave, let Harry's know within 30 days, they'll give you a free refund. Here's how you get the trial offer. You get the $13 value trial set, comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, the weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel that does smell very good, and a travel blade cover. Listeners to this show, this high-quality podcast, can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/TonyK. Make sure you go to harrys.com/TonyK to redeem your offer, and it says to let them know that I sent you. You know,
tell them Satchmo sent you.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, that's enough's enough on that. But Harry says it. You know, it's high quality stuff. It's good.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Do you want to tell me about this song, since you kept the copy?
This song, yes. This song is, it's called Kerryad. Now, we thought we played Kerryad the other day. Sent it to us by Michael Capizzoli, who was making the movie The Thunderers, yes. About the bloke from Pittsburgh that goes over to Wales and starts an American yes. football team. Turns out he sent us the wrong song. So this is actually a song. This is going to be the theme music for this movie, which will be shot this summer, I believe.
Are you in this movie?
Apparently, I'm going to be in this movie.
Nigel is so sucking up to this guy.
So this is offering me a part.
Nigel's beaming right now.
Okay, yes, so I'm very excited.
Where do you have to go to be in the movie? Do you have to go to Wales?
Are they going
to
fly me to Wales? Yeah, I think we have to
play Celtic Manor.
All the details, but it'll be I think sometime in August is when they're planning to shoot.
Are you going to get a featured role, or are you going to be like Richard Justice and end up on the cutting room floor?
Well, I think it's always possible that you could wind up on cutting room floor.
This is very lovely.
This is. But I think I'm supposed to play the role of the treasurer, which I think is fairly ironic for anybody who knows me and knows I'm not very good with money.
No kidding.
But yes, and this is...
And Michael Capizzoli is a fan of the podcast and a fan of yours.
Fan of the podcast, yes. A huge fan of yours as well.
He didn't offer me a role.
Would you like to fly over to Wales with me? I'm sure we could find something.
No. No, I wouldn't.
In your honor, I will mutter at some point, what a shot.
That's great. That's great.
But I would like to point out that Claire Jones... And Chris Marshall, who wrote this song, Claire performs it. They'll be performing in Richmond on July 29th at Green Spring Academy of Music.
Oh, good.
So you want to make sure you check that out. And it's
Michael,
just
when people send their music in, as great as this music is, from Michael Capizzoli and earlier in the show from Brandon S. Balker, how do they do that?
Email your music into the show by sending it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And are we selling anything that you want to specifically note?
Now that the rain has finally left the area, you can put away that Tell Michael umbrella. But no, nothing out of the ordinary. We still have big announcements as to what's coming into the shop for the summer.
Okay. All right. Shout outs to Guardian Fire Protection and Tidewater Refrigeration, who came over to Chatter yesterday quickly and did everything that they were supposed to do, which makes me happy.
We love that.
And Frank Johnson, who is the ambassador from Little Egg Harbor, New Jersey, which is, you know, down the coast of New Jersey towards Atlantic City, of the United States Pickleball Association. I don't know much about pickleball.
What is pickleball?
It started out your way near Rehoboth and Ocean City.
I know. I know a lot of people at country clubs play this. It's played with a
It's on the paddle courts, right. But it's like table tennis on a life-size court.
Okay. Yeah. So can I also say one thing, and I didn't say this before when I saw the socialite. I didn't see that the socialite had brought with him Mark Rippon.
Oh, no.
Yes, Mark is in-house, and he is listening. He's having breakfast.
Super Bowl 26.
He and the socialite are going to go out and play golf.
Love Rip.
And Mark has, there's a lot of memorabilia in Chatter. Many things are signed by Mark Rippon. For me, in my career as a sports writer that was between 30 and 35 years long, I never had as much fun, and Jeannie knows this because she edited all the copy, Never had as much fun as doing the bandwagon columns, which were completely off point and utterly...
We'd be fired today.
Not just self-indulgent, but fan-indulgent. They were not, you know, that's what they were. They were designed to build a crowd and make everybody happy. And dealing with the people that I dealt with, and Mark Rippon was one of them, sports writers are, by nature, hardened people. They tend not to like athletes. They tend to believe they're very jealous of the money, very jealous of the attention and the acclaim. And they think that athletes lie to them all the time, or worse, just dismiss them. And Mark Rippon, among others, and Russ Grimm and Mark Addix and a bunch of people were tremendously cooperative during that whole season. And you would say to yourself, why not? They were unbelievably great. They lost two games, I think, by a total of 5 points.
Right.
They won the Super Bowl. I mean, everything they did was amazing. And I think that if you said to Mark Rippon, be as honest as you can be, he would say, in fact, we'll bring Mark up to the microphone now, that was the most magical season.
It was.
That everything he threw up in the air was caught. That there must have been... Mark, there must have been a feeling that you had that this is out of body because everything worked all the time. You've never been associated with anything like that.
Good morning. Yes, yeah. That was.
Follow that.
That was. Yeah, I tell you, you guys are great. By the way, just sitting here eating breakfast with Alan. Really fun to listen to. I have played pickleball.
Alan's also a great golfer.
Yeah. Yes.
Like tour quality, great. But go back in that season for me. And what was that like?
Well, first of all, I have a $110 million pickleball story, I got to tell you.
Oh, okay.
My brother and I went up to his baseball coach in college house to play pickleball against his wife. His baseball coach's wife and him, and they beat us in pickleball. And then she offered me an investment to say, hey, would you want to get involved with this? My brother's got this startup company. It's back in 1986. And it was my first year in the league. I think I made $75,000. I go, thank you, but, you know, I got my money all tied up in investments. And she goes, okay, well, just want to let you know. Well, John and Christy Blake. Christy Blake is Bill Gates' sister, so that was the start of Microsoft.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
All right. How did they do? Did
that work out for them? Well, that worked out for them.
Yeah, so that was a $110 million pickleball game.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Hey.
Well, Tony, I mean, you talk about that bandwagon, and, you know, maybe us as players kind of jumped on that thing, too. You know, I mean, we knew we had something special. We had a lot of smart guys. We'd been to the playoffs. I'd actually won a playoff game in Philadelphia the year before, which was kind of one of the stepping stones in that era. You were judged by as a Redskin player, especially as a Redskin quarterback, you know, until you won the big game, you kind of were considered in that era going deep into the playoffs. If you missed the playoffs, boy, this whole city was about ready to, you know, to take you down. I mean, that was what it was like. So your accountability piece was incredible. And so I think we all, you know, back in that was kind of a time when there was no free agency. We did things together on and off the field. Mm-hmm, we became a part of this community through charitable events, through families. You know, we did things together and the community here. And then RFK was just a great place to watch a football game or to be at a football game. And my first couple years, you know, sitting on the sidelines writing plays down, I was going, man, this is so cool. You know, this really is big time, top of the, and then I also had to follow, you know, Doug Williams, Joe Theismann, guys that, you know, won Super Bowl. So I was going to be judged based on winning a Super Bowl, and what a better place to do it here and with a team. And I also want to say one last thing about that team, 91-92 team. The first two Super Bowls were in work stoppage years.
That's right.
There was an asterisk behind Joe Gibbs as far as winning the Super Bowl in a 16-game schedule. Take nothing away from those teams. That was what was dealt, and they end up, like Bobby Bethard and Charlie Castle. They were wonderful at, the replacement guys that came in, and then just being able to keep the team during those work stoppage years to be successful, and it was great. I mean, we had some smart guys, and just to see your articles, Tony, and you're kind of just saying, hey, we all need to jump on this bandwagon. Well, we as players did too, and like you said, Russ Grimm and Mark Addicks were awesome at giving you insight.
Do you know Mark Addicks now? Addicks went to Harvard Medical School. Yes. Harvard Medical School. And he's an orthopedic surgeon.
Not a orthopedic, the top orthopedic surgeon in Houston.
It's absolutely remarkable. But when you, as the quarterback of that team, and you had very good receivers. I mean, you really did have good receivers. But you threw bombs. And they were always caught.
Art Monk.
There must
Gary
have
Clark.
Been a time when you
Ricky
said
Sanders,
to yourself,
Ricky Sanders.
What am I doing here? This is unbelievable. You must have thought.
Well, it was uncharacteristic to have that many opportunities downfield to make that many big-time plays. But that all starts, with getting those safeties into the box. They talk about the box, right? And being able to run the football. And you're only as good as the guys up front, both on the offensive side and defensive side. And, we had some studs, the Hogs. Obviously, everyone knows the history there. But to have Charles Mann, Tim Johnson, Fred Stokes, Jumpy Gathers, we were pretty stout.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a pretty good football team.
Tori has her hand up.
May I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
If you could give Ovechkin advice before this do or die game tonight, what would you tell him?
Die. Just die. Just leave it all out there on the ice,
Yeah.
Out there. This is it. I mean, and you could really see in his eyes this last game and this series how he has just put his body, his mind, his soul into everything he's doing. This team was a different team. I mean, on Monday night here at the Cap Center. And gosh, it's been since Gary Williams, right?
Since there's been a national champion
here in this city. Boy, would the city just love the Caps to take this to Vegas.
I was thinking of the comparison between those two teams, the Redskins of 91-92 and the Caps. And I will say this, maybe in hindsight it seems this way and it wasn't at the time, but I think it was. When the Redskins went 14-2 that season, I think everybody thought, they are going to win the Super Bowl. It just seemed like a flawlessly constructed team. I don't think we feel that way about the Caps. I wish we did.
But the Redskins also had history of winning the Super
Correct.
Bowl.
Right.
Yes.
They didn't have
and
that disappointment.
And they had the winning coach.
They had all of that stuff. And they also, if I'm not mistaken, during the playoffs, they got to play teams they had already beaten. I mean, you had to have tremendous confidence walking into those games, because you'd beaten these teams already.
Atlanta, at home.
Yep, the Mud Bowl.
Mud Bowl. Detroit the following week.
Have to play the Cowboys.
Nope, didn't have to play the Cowboys. Slaughterfest, at RFK on the NFC Championship game, basically. Defensively, offensively, just probably one of the best executed games.
Yep.
And then to go into a Super Bowl against a team that, everyone felt was, looking at it, definitely the favorite, Buffalo, because they should have won it the year before. Scott Norwood missed that chip shot field goal, and so and then all the stuff that happened prior to the game. Their defensive line coach calling our guys big and fat, and you don't want to fuel
the
these
hogs.
Guys at the Hogs at all, and that just gave us energy. And I can remember that practice, and I look back to the 87-88 season where we practiced out in San Diego the week before the game, and those practices, that was back when. The collective bargaining agreement, it wasn't like shirts and shorts and, tops and a helmet, and you go out there with walkthroughs. This was actually...
This
not only pads, this was...
You're hitting.
Oh, unbelievable. Our defense gave us such a good look, and our offense scout team gave such good looks that it was like... Second nature, just go play the game, And it was really cool.
All right, thank you so much for being on. I drafted you to do this. Go sit with the socialite now. It's fine.
We'll continue the show.
Thank you. Mark Rippon,
you
boys and girls.
Thank you, guys. You guys are awesome.
That's Nigel, fantastic. You have some news? Some small amount of news?
Yeah, you were absolutely correct. Two games, total of 5 points.
Yeah.
That's
It's one of the greatest teams of all time.
Just remarkable. Speaking of football, they've changed the kickoff rules.
Well, they change them, but they don't get rid of the kickoff.
That's what we all think.
Everybody knows that's where we're headed.
Yes.
It's a tremendously exciting play. It is the most dangerous play in football, and everybody knows it. There is the likelihood of a serious injury on the kickoff is far five times greater than the likelihood of a serious injury on any other play. So get rid of it.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do is lessen the amount of distance that the people are running. But as a friend of mine said, after they go about 10 yards, they're running at full speed anyway.
Yeah,
so there you go. Yeah. And a nice win by the Nats last night, 2-1 over the Padres.
Michael K. Taylor. After striking out twice in clutch situations,
yes,
came up with the two biggest plays of the game.
Yep.
He threw
a guy in. The assist was even bigger.
That was, huh?
The assist was the biggest.
Yeah. Play. Yeah. Well, he's running in, picking up a ball in center field, and no bounce. Strike to the catcher, which was ruled safe, and then on replay ruled out. That was a great, great play. And then he hit it off the wall to drive in the second run to go 2-1. In that,
the cutest thing about that hit was not that he did it. He was just almost stunned, just stood there, kind of in relief. And then afterwards, his teammates were so happy for him.
Because they like him.
They like him. But
he's batting 190.
Yeah, it's tough.
But he's been in a slump, and they were so happy for him. The scene looked like they had just won the World Series. They were all over him.
I think he was emboldened by that. Sixth inning throw.
That is a great.
And by the way, Jerry Hellickson. Yeah, another strong.
Never gets wins, but his ERA is down around the twos.
2.13.
And he gives you quality starts every time he goes out.
Five and a third.
Michael, you're going today to the game.
Yeah, we are going today.
Who's pitching today?
That's still.
Did they bring somebody up?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Fetty pitching.
Yeah. So. I knew this is a getaway day. Soto will probably play.
Yeah, get to see Juan Soto in person.
You get to see Soto. Yeah, he was one for one last night. They're already
walking him. With three walks.
They're already walking him because they don't know what he can and can't do. So they're walking him, putting him on. And he got picked off. And this is not.
That was a great move.
This is not double A. The lefty picked him off clean.
Yeah.
Even FP. Well, even FP said, I don't know.
Your new friend.
I don't know. I don't know. You want to challenge him. He's gonna, it looks like he's out on that.
Yeah.
FP, my pal now. FP.
There you go.
Yeah. So I was watching that.
And
texting with Tracy through the entire game.
And to follow up on a story that we did earlier this week, the hardware store in Percival, Virginia.
Yeah, they fired the guy.
Yeah, with
the historic hardware store.
The historic hardware store, the Nichols Hardware Family Store. It's been around since, I think, 1914 or something like that.
Nichols, Joey 5 cents, for those of you who've seen Annie Hall.
I guess one of the employees there had made unbelievably disparaging remarks about the Boy Scouts and homosexuals.
And said, get out.
Get out of here, and it drove the kid out. And the manager of the store said,
this is service industry.
Yeah.
You cannot chase away the customers. You can't do that.
Yeah,
of course he was fired. He should be fired.
Yes. And they issued a statement saying, listen, we're really sorry. This is not who we are as a store.
It actually is.
Well, apparently they talked to that guy before, and he said, I thought I'd straighten them out.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Obviously not.
It is who
so
they are.
Third strike, you're out.
All right, good.
So there you go.
All right, so that's all we've got in news. And we'll have Old Guy when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are the Who, or this is the Who. This is Old Guy Radio for the day. Nigel, explain why we're doing this.
Because on this date in 1969, and I believe I was on the planet at this point. I was, because I was born in April.
I definitely was.
This is when the Who released Tommy, the rock opera album.
Not quite as revolutionary as Sgt. Pepper, but close.
Did it build on the legacy? I mean, was it sort of like Sgt. Pepper, this is the first concept album, and then just took it another step, right?
Yeah, but this is great.
Oh, yeah.
This is the height of their careers.
Yeah.
This is absolutely great. It became a very, very entertaining Broadway show that I took my son and daughter to see.
It was one of the first shows you took us to, and it was overwhelming. At the time, I was under 9 years old.
Yeah, but visually and the excitement level, the energy level. Yes, Tori has her hand up.
Could you write a song today that says Deaf, Dumb, and Blind Child?
I don't see why you can't.
I don't think you can.
You don't? Right. You don't?
Yeah.
Really?
Nope.
That was part of a great...
As Townsend.
And they performed it. That would be their concert. The Who performs Tommy.
Yeah, and that song, Pinball Wizard, they played it at virtually every single concert that they've ever done.
Yeah, and Peter Townsend would rip his fingers off.
Yes, and then Daltrey, you know, swings with
a microphone.
And
they also always played Summertime Blues, which was
fantastic. Great.
But Townsend said that of Pinball Wizard, that was the most clumsy piece of writing I'd ever done.
Nice.
And yet it turns out, you know, to be brilliant.
So I wanted to tell a story about yesterday without going into too many details about the story. Carol was in the car and she was driving out to the beach.
And a guy was honking his horn. No.
She had the dog in
little
the
help,
car.
Please.
The dog in the car.
Front seat, back seat.
Dog was in the back seat in a harness. In okay. a, you know, the dog was fine.
Just reading his
the
phone.
The dog, well, the dog was not reading his phone. The dog does not sleep in the car and stands much of the way, but the dog's fine. The dog is not bad in the car. Some dogs throw up in cars.
Yes.
Chessie does not. Chessie is fine. For reasons that will not be discussed here, but they are legitimate reasons, Carol had occasion to call me when she got, as you drive to the beach, if you go on 404 and 16, if you go on 16, there
are Greenwood.
There are two little towns with speed limits of 25 miles an hour.
Oh, yes.
There is Greenwood and there is Ellendale.
Yeah.
The first little town that you get to when you're going to the beach is Greenwood. In Greenwood, she calls me. And then she tells me, she calls me back a little bit later, to tell me that she has been given a ticket by the police in Greenwood for using a cell phone, holding the cell phone in your hand and using the cell phone, she gets a ticket. And I said, well, why didn't you put the cell phone into the system?
This is a Bluetooth-enabled car.
Right. And she said, I don't know how to do that. And I go, well, neither do I. But I have that in my car because someone did it for me.
Yeah, right. You can't troubleshoot
And I
that.
Said, I don't even understand. She said, I was holding the cell phone in my hand and the policeman saw me. Now, in my mind, that meant that she had the cell phone in her hand, but it was under... No, she wasn't even... I didn't know that she was using it.
Right.
That it was underneath where you could look into the car, sort of like if I'm holding my keys in my left hand and driving with my right hand. It doesn't mean your cell phone is on. It doesn't mean anything like that. It may as well be something else. And I said, was it on? She said, yeah, it was on. I said, oh, well, were you using it? Yeah, I was using it. Okay. The ticket?
200.
206.
Ooh, yeah.
$206.
Yep.
As a friend of mine said to me last night, you just paid for all the Little League uniforms
in Greenwood
Little League in Delaware. $206. And I didn't, I mean.
It's that much in D.C.
That's a lot of money.
Should be more.
So, should be more?
Yes.
Yeah. It's so dangerous.
Okay. What's coming out of your inheritance?
But let me say something about this. With all due respect to the people of Greenwood and Bridgeville, we are like
Ellendale.
Ducks in a barrel through there.
If you go through there at 26, that's a ticket.
Well, you know what? So don't.
And you don't.
Don't.
You see that coming up, you slow down.
Yeah. Well, she didn't. I thought she was going to get popped for speeding. No.
Yeah, that's tough.
She got popped for the cell phone.
She always wondered if you
but
like.
But that's sort of, I mean, we have the cable. How do you make the phone work through the console?
It's pretty easy.
This show is not long enough.
Tori, do you still have those contacts at Comcast that could walk us through this?
I've done this for every one of your cars.
But you didn't do it for her. Mine works.
You have to do this when the car is in park.
Okay.
And that's what gets you when you go into somebody else's car and you realize after you've already gotten onto the road, you haven't synced it.
It's a lot. It's a lot of money. That was a lot of money.
You know, it's really... some years ago, I worked for Motorola. Remember Motorola?
Oh, yeah.
And they were doing a lot of research about cell phone use and all this and that. And all the experts at the time, I think this is probably still true, it's really not about handheld versus something else, right? You can get just as distracted changing your radio, doing anything.
Right.
It's about the cognitive distraction. And so even hands-free, you can get so distracted. And
that
I can do
true.
This. I can get into a conversation,
yes.
right? And I am so deep in the conversation, I don't realize what's going on around me.
Highway hypnosis.
Yeah.
But they can't walk that back.
Yeah.
They can't walk that back. They can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Right.
My new issue, when you watch people drive, the people that wear earbuds when they are on the road.
They should not.
No, it's illegal.
Yeah, no.
And they wear white earbuds.
Because you're listening to music and you
this is like one of the
anything.
First questions on your driver's license test.
You shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
That is totally distracting. You should be looking around and all of that. Yeah. I don't have any noise in the car when I drive.
You drive in total silence.
Well, except for the sound of your own voice.
I talk to myself.
You make a lot of phone calls.
And often nobody answers the phone.
That is correct.
But I answer.
We all call her ID.
Call Tracy Roberts.
Right.
You know, and then she doesn't answer.
You're not doing books on tape or anything like that?
No, because I get distracted by that.
Yeah.
So his issue with books on tape, he needs to pause every chapter to break it down with whoever's sitting next to him.
Yeah,
it's really
talk
distracting.
About it. It's not very good.
And I'm so surprised. I could see you driving to the beach with the Beach Boys playing or something like the Beatles.
No, I mean I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm all right. It's not. You know, it's a little less than 3 hours. It's okay, because we have the Chick Room today, I want to bring up the cheerleader story.
Oh, yes.
The ex-Texans, there are a bunch of ex-Texans cheerleaders who are and abuse is becoming a word that I'm not sure that we all look at in exactly the same way. Abuse, to me, is an extraordinarily strong word. And in my mind, abuse has a physical component 100% of the time. And
there's psychological
that
abuse.
Is to me, I'm just saying in my mind. There are cheerleaders, and I'll just read the first paragraph. Three former Houston Texans cheerleaders filed a class action lawsuit against the franchise and the director of cheerleading, alleging team officials forced them to work extra hours without compensation, exposed them to abusive shaming behavior by the director, and failed to protect them from physical abuse from fans. Where are we? There are a lot of cheerleaders suing individual teams, and I assume sort of down the road might sue the league. I assume this happens in a lot of sports. I've never understood. I don't want to get involved in something where I'm depriving people of their rights. I've never really understood why people became cheerleaders to begin with. I mean, that was just my thing. But do these rise to that level in your mind?
Well, I don't know the specifics of what they allege happened to them. But I do think that cheerleaders like ingenue actresses are maybe in a position where they have to go along to get along.
Right.
And people like to be cheerleaders. It's a very demanding athletic occupation, and they enjoy doing it. And I think they put up with a lot of stuff
right.
that now they think they're not going to put up with anymore.
They get virtually no money.
I think it's entirely possible everything they allege happened. I don't know if it did or not, but I think it's entirely possible.
I think every part of
and
it happened.
Echo what Jeannie's saying, and I would add to that, I think you can look at any business, any organization, any industry, if you will, and say, wow, there were certain behaviors that were tolerated, right? They shouldn't have been, but they were tolerated, and the world's changing, right? The world is changing. And behaviors that were accepted and behaviors that were accepted by a lot of women just because they wanted to be in a particular workplace and they wanted to do certain things thought, oh, I have to put up with this. They're now all saying no.
Everybody knows that this whole thing started with the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders who were so important to the culture that there was a movie made about them in the 1980s or something like that. And the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders stood at, I always thought, the intersection of sex and sports. I mean, they were asked to wear as revealing a garb as possible and comport themselves in a way that said, look at us. You want to be part of this team because look at us. And I think that they willingly did that over some long period of time. And this led to other franchises doing the same thing. There is now, I think, a movement the other way. And I bring this up because of what happened in San Antonio the other day. San Antonio said to the dancers, the children, you're done.
Bye-bye.
See you. Yeah. Get out of here. And now we're basically bringing in the King family.
Yeah.
You know, we're bringing it up with people.
Acrobats.
Yeah. We're doing something really different because we don't want, we see this trend of being sued. We see what we didn't know was the error of our ways for 20 or 30 years. And now we see with the Me Too movement, now we see with all of this, that we are on the wrong side culturally of this particular fault line. You're looking like you disagree with me.
Well, it might be that. It might be partly that. But it might also be because they want to appeal to their audience, which may be more family. They may want younger people, you know, in the stands. They may...
The way to bring in young men was with young women.
Yeah, I know, but they may want families.
Yeah.
And
the
boom,
way to
bring, chicka, boom, you know, it's not working for them.
And the way to bring in young men is have winning teams.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I can speak for my two young men. Winning teams trumps cheerleaders every single time. But this debate is going on in college campuses and universities all across the country because a lot of them for years and years in the big schools have had dancers, cheerleaders, whatever you want to call them. And a lot of people on campus are going, what are we doing here?
This is a real social upheval.
Right. I think 10 years from now, we will look back at the Dallas cheerleaders. We will look back at some of these performing groups and go, oh, my God, really?
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me when they sue for not getting enough money, like, you know, I don't know what the standards are for money. They would give these people a sandwich and a ticket, and that's all they ever got.
Yeah, they get the...
These are not union shops.
Yeah, they get the minimum wage, whatever the state minimum wage is.
Yeah.
But then I guess their contention is that they were required to work a lot more hours off the clock to retain the positions. And they say that wasn't fair.
Yeah. What we do.
They are treated shabbily.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's, yeah, as you said,
they're treated shabbily. I never understood why people want.
When you learn the deal, it's like it's
really
just
it's a bad deal.
Zero money.
And it's a bad deal.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's a bad deal.
We do, but whatever happens tonight with the Caps, but we know what they're going to win. Is we get to watch the Las Vegas Knights, and if you've not watched the pregame activities at the Las Vegas,
it's like a Vegas show, isn't it?
It is. It's like medieval times meets. Engelbert Humperdinck. It is spectacular.
Okay, and that's
right?
That's Vegas. That's what they do.
At most hockey games, the people who come out to clean the ice, right, it's usually like old fat guys who wish they could have played in the NHL.
Right.
Or they get kids' teams and things like that. In Vegas, Nigel, help me, they're dressed like female gladiators.
Yeah, I mean,
they're young. They're very attractive.
Xena the Warrior Princess.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, but
Xena.
That's Vegas. That's not necessarily Buffalo or
right.
Cincinnati or Green Bay or San Antonio. Yeah. It's not necessarily.
Do you think eventually there'll be like five or six teams in Las Vegas with the NHL?
Sure. Yeah. They're going to be all teams will be in Las Vegas.
Everybody moves there.
Once gambling became legal, everybody's moving to Las Vegas. That's how it works. I will take a break. We'll get out of here. We will come back with a jingle and with some email when we return. And now I will go greet the people and take some pictures on Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag.
It's Kirsten Olmstead.
Gonna read some for all of you
folks. Just
fabulous. She's just wonderful. So I'm looking up at television now because it is now, as I'm saying this, it's 9 o'clock in the morning in the East. Although when you get this, it'll be later than that. I'm looking at Megyn Kelly, and I'm reminded that just looking in the paper today, she's going to be portrayed in a movie by Charlize Theron. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Megyn Kelly.
And
I will bet you that Charlize Theron looks more like Megyn Kelly than Megyn Kelly looks like Megyn Kelly when they're done with that.
I saw Charlize Theron in a movie last night that I know you love. And once it started, I couldn't turn it away. That thing you do. She's the worst girlfriend in the history.
She falls for the dentist.
Yes,
I also landed on that thing you do last night for the last hour and 10 minutes and could not.
I love that movie so much.
Whatever else Tom Hanks has done in his life, and he has done spectacular things, to write and direct that movie.
It's just brilliant.
It is. That movie is perfect.
And didn't he write the song, too?
Not. He wrote some of the songs. That movie's perfect. That Thing You Do is perfect. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Richard Justice of MLB.com for coming on the show today. Thank today's sponsors, Harry's Razors and Blue Apron. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Let me thank Mark Rippon for graciously coming on the show, and of course, The Socialite for simply being The Socialite. From Rob in Panama City, excuse me, sir, the check engine light is on my bicycle. I'm pregnant with my first child, and I need to get to Rockville to see my oldest daughter who is in hospice care. I just need some help. You can mail this help to a little bit of Bootsy's inheritance going bye-bye at gmail.com, making fun of me from the other day. Bruce Anderson. Wow, the podcast has such reach. Bruce Anderson is the organist for the Washington Capitals. He played the opening part of I Have a Piano last night. During the Caps, the other night, during the Caps 3-0 win over the Lightning. Is the turnaround in the Caps' fortunes a coincidence? This is from Tony Beeson in Cincinnati.
He played.
I didn't hear
so
it.
So Bruce Anderson did that. P.S. I shared the song with him back in December of 2016 when it first had aired on the podcast. As a joke, I suggested he should play it at Caps games. I followed up again this week when the tide seemed to be turning against the Caps. I never really expected a reply, and Bruce writes, I actually played the first little bit on the organ last night prior to one of the cheers. How fantastic
That's
is that?
That's fantastic.
Steve the Sycophant, I didn't realize you were the person who gave me $20 yesterday. Thanks so much. The $20 allowed me to get my car's fixed engine light repaired, sell the car, and use the money received to pay for my daughter's operation in Baltimore. She's on her way to full health now, and if someone would just give me $5,000, maybe $10,000, I'll be able to take her to Bermuda for a full recovery. Yes, make fun of me all you want. Chris Kaiser, wow. Chicago, Illinois. I'm writing because on your April 25th show, Barry Zwerluga spoke highly, can I read this on the air, Abandoned Dunes.
Oh, yes.
Abandoned Dunes and a nice trip he had there. My father, Mike, opened Abandoned Dunes in 1999, and my brother and I now work with him managing our golf properties. You said there were four main destination golf resorts the public could play, and I wanted to make sure you knew about a fifth, our newest resort in Central Washington called Sand Valley Golf Resort. My friend Tom Dorr, a regular listener of your podcast, reached out to me to see if I was outraged at your oversight, and I was not, because it means I now have the opportunity to write you and invite you to visit Sand Valley. Tom wanted to make sure I not only invited you, but also Michael and any littles who might like to be in your foursome. Our third course, Mammoth Dunes, was designed by David Kidd, the designer of Abandoned Dunes, and is set to open at the end of this month. It'd be great to have you visit and play all three of our courses at Sand Valley if that's something you're interested in doing. That could be Michael and me and the socialite and Nathan. That could be. Best of luck with your awesome endeavors, and hi to Wilbon, a fellow alum of St. Ignatius College Prep in Chicago. This is a keeper. World. Give that to Michael. Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. I'm fascinated with the 500-cent special. How much is that in Canadian? I have a bunch of Canadian quarters on my dresser. Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi. Michael is selling himself short. He also parlayed his Ivy League into education into a very successful gig as an underpants spokesman.
Well, that's true.
Mike from Burke, Virginia.
Uh-oh.
I have no particular position on your interaction with the guy who asked for a little help, but the notion of Luke Daniel Boone Russert defending himself with a big old knife almost made me fall out of my office chair laughing. Let's face it. The main use to which Luke, a hothouse flower of the first order, could put a huge knife would be slicing up a nice steak at the Palm, not going Crocodile Dundee on some miscreant. From Mike O'Brien in Boston, Mass., formerly Revere. I also had a similar story to yours of somebody putting me in an awkward situation. I was in D.C. at a restaurant having an omelet, and this bald orange man came up to me at my table and said, "Do you want to buy a T-shirt? It's only $12. I gave him $15 and told him to take care of his restaurant. How would you have handled the situation? Pretty much that way. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
If I wish one of your guys had children, if I could kick them in the head or stomp on their testicles so you could feel my pain, because that's the pain I have, waking up every day.
Thanks, thank you. Thank you.
Has a deep resounding call which is easily distinguishable from all other frogs. In Kentucky's chorus of frog calls, the bullfrog sings bass.
Speak up so I can hear you. Speak up so high. Dress up so I can see you. Dress up so nice. So life can beat you, face up and shine. Hold up, cause they won't know you. Hold up the time. The moon shines down on me, follows my car. Sing that shines on me, will find you where you are. Your books and your papers, journals full. Pile them all up to heaven, still not you. I hope I've left a mark on you like you've done to me. I know that in your magic mirror, sometimes you will see me. The moon shines down on me, it follows my guide. Shines on me, find you where you are. Moon shines down on me, follows my guide. Sing that shines on me.